This is part two in a series on Humboldt County's Cannabis Abatement Program. Click on Abatement Program Analysis Part 1 for more. I sat down with another abatement recipient to discuss her experience with the program. She wishes to remain anonymous for her concern about retaliation.
Oh, I'm just stuck in hell, you know? There's nobody helping, nobody cares. It was just, I cannot believe this is happening to me in the United States.
But it was nothing short of a terrorist attack. That's how it felt to me. It was a terrorist attack. You were absolutely guilty until proven innocent, and it was just an absolute power play between, and what are you going to do? You better do exactly what we say, right, or else. You basically, your property is going to be seized. I mean, that was the implicit message. It might have been not been those words.
Tell me from the beginning what happened with the abatement when you received it and all that.
It's been about a year. I think like March 31st is when the abatement went on our gate. Whole thing. But we didn't find it till like April 3rd. But really it started prior to that. Where it really began was in January. Because we applied for the amnesty program or the safe home program through the county.
Oh.
We had built an unpermitted cabin, or rebuilt, really. The property always had a cabin on it, but it was never a permitted cabin. When my dad got the place, like, I don't know, like 35, 40 years ago,
yeah,
it had a cabin on there. It was always assessed as raw land. But anyway, that fell in, and so we did rebuild that. You know, we kept the plans, and we decided, you know what? We'd always had, like, a 215 garden before. Always with all the med cards,
yeah,
and all that
of course.
Kind of stuff. But we'd had a bad experience 1 year, and we were just, like, kind of done.
Yeah.
But we thought, you know, we thought we might move. We had all these ideas, but we thought we really need to get all the dwellings permitted. And they've been coming on Cana. You've heard them.
Yeah.
You know, work with us, talk to us, just come on in.
Yeah.
We won't charge you any fines. It was very much... we want to work with you, come on out of the hills, trust us. And I'm trusting. So I said, you know what, we really should do this. My dad and my husband were like, oh, my dad was more on my, like, you know, you should, especially if you guys are thinking of selling.
She took her safe homes application to the planning and building department, and the first thing they said was, quote, did you register your spring, and what's the slope of your driveway?
I had this weird feeling the day I turned in the application. I remember... We actually got in kind of an argument about it, because he's like, it's a trap, don't do it, don't do it. I'm like, no, I really do think that they want to work with me. So I go in with a $399 application fee, and I turn it in, and the first thing the girl asks me is, have you registered your spring, and what's the slope of the driveway? And I said, why do you want to know the slope of the driveway? Why is that important to the buildings? And no, I have not registered my spring. Why would I register my spring? I have all the water rights. I don't understand what. But it was a weird moment. And then she got up and went to the computer. I'm waiting for a building inspector to come out. She says they go out to our area every week. I'm waiting months, January to the end of March, and heard nothing. And then we get an abatement notice on our gate. That's really where it began. I feel at this point that it was a trap. I got completely sucked into it. We got an abatement notice. And then went in the next day to talk to Warren Black, who was the code enforcement agent on the letter. He was the guy on the gate. Yeah. And then Brian Bowes was the guy on the letter. And I was just completely panicked because it was $20,000 in fines. The two accusations were unpermitted grading for the purpose of cannabis cultivation and basically growing cannabis.
Her notice of violation cited cannabis cultivation without a permit, a violation of the Commercial Cannabis Land Use Ordinance, Humboldt County Code, Section 314-55.4, and for unpermitted grading for the purpose of cannabis cultivation, a violation of Humboldt County Code, Section 331-14. Though, she said, quote, I didn't have a stick of cannabis on my land and never graded for the purpose of cannabis cultivation.
And we didn't have a stick of cannabis on our property. There was absolutely nothing. I even asked Warren Black the next morning when we went in, you know, have you walked on our property? We're not allowed to walk on your property. Well, then how do you know if I have cannabis on my property? I said, do you have photos? What is it you have? And so he did bring out some photos of a medical farm that we'd had. And I said, well, I have all my med cards for that. And he said, medical didn't happen after 2016. As soon as basically everything turned legal, that was non-existent. And I said, well, I have med cards allow me to grow the number of plants that you're seeing there from the sky. Mm-hmm. And he said, that's because people like you will pay for them. I was just livid. And then my husband, you know, got upset and was like, this is extortion. And he's like, oh, I've heard that before. And it just went on. I said, what do you want us to do? We have no plants on our property. We never graded for the purpose of cannabis cultivation. And he just wasn't listening to it. And he basically says, you better have a professional out on your property within 10 days where the fines begin. I said, what if I can't find somebody? What if I can't hire an engineer? Or I don't have the funds to have a professional. That was very specific with the charges that we needed to have a restoration plan. So I'm panicked. My husband leaves the building at this point because he's furious. And I'm taking notes on what I need to do because I am not going to lose my dad's land. That was really my dad's property. You know, he slaved for that. He was a mill worker. I didn't grow up in a farming family. My parents got up and went to work every day. We're not sitting on a barrel of money. It was never like that. So it was really frustrating. So on the way home, we go by Barrett Engineering, completely panic-stricken at this point, because he made the threat very clear. You better have this in writing and some kind of documentation that you have hired a professional and they're willing to work with you. You need to email that to me. You better do that by this date. Barrett Engineering said that they were booked 2 months out. And then I go by Timberland Resource and Fortuna with Chris Carroll. You know, he was out in the field. And this was just absolutely crazy. The timeline of it, too.
She said that at this point, this is when the, quote, financial devastation begins.
So the engineer and the forester came out within a couple days. You know, I'm emailing the contract. And, I mean, it begins. The financial devastation just begins. Yeah. Now it's like $4,000, $11,000 for the engineer. It just kept coming, you know, by the thousands to hire these professionals. In the meanwhile, you know, Warren Black told us, you need to prove that you do not have any cannabis on your property. So we did show that we had absolutely no cannabis, anything on our land, emailed it to him immediately. He never responded. To this day, he has never returned a single email. So that threat still existed. And we're waiting, really. I mean, really, we were waiting for him to retract it and say, oh, okay, you know, yeah, let's clear this up. There's no cannabis on your property. You know, you're good to go. And I did say to him during that initial intake meeting, you know, I find this really interesting that the moment I apply for amnesty, I get abated. Oh, he says, oh, those two things are completely unrelated. I said, well, it sure seems related to me because I have been waiting for a building inspector to come out and I get an abatement order instead.
She elaborates on the emotional impact on her as a result of the abatement.
I, like, cannot sleep. I'm stressing. I'm, you know, $20,000 a day is looming. And in the meanwhile, I'm watching people around me who are getting abated. Right here in my neighborhood, two neighbors that got abated right next door, that neither one of them had any cannabis. My neighbor, literally, that I share a fence with, had a vegetable. You know, she had raised beds, and she did have little hoop houses before, and it was just for vegetables. I thought she was going to have a heart attack. We went over there and helped her tear down her little greenhouses that she had built. She's a grandmother raising her kids, you know, her grandkids. And the whole neighborhood, which was kind of cool about our neighborhood, went in and helped her. But I saw the stress it took on her and how frantic they were, and her son's girlfriend is calling the board of supervisor, trying to get help, trying to get clarification, trying to get somebody to listen that she didn't have any cannabis. It didn't matter. So that happened before we got abated. Not, you know, we're feeling bad for her. And then I've got another neighbor at the end of the road, too, that had squatters in the house that took over. And for 2 years, she was trying to get county agencies to help her, a single woman, you know, like, evict these people. And then there's an abatement order on her property, and she's over there just cleaning up this complete disaster zone that they had destroyed her land. And I'm like, okay, that's another unjust abatement. Then I'm hearing about another elderly lady that lives right here in my little rural community. You know, her husband just died. There was like a tractor out in the yard. She gets an abatement order literally days after he dies. As an elderly woman, and she's dealing with just, I'm just going to call it the terrorist attack. The threats of thousands of dollars a day, because there's just so many assumptions that the moment they see a greenhouse or the moment they just suspect something, you have to prove that you didn't do anything wrong.
I asked about the grading violation.
Backtracking quite a bit. Explain the grading of just the driveway, right? Did it come with the property?
I'm really glad that we backed up to that because that's really the heart of this issue. We were accused of grading more than 50 cubic yards for the purpose of cannabis cultivation. That is how they define a grading violation. And I admitted right away, I'm like, you know what, we really do grade our driveway every year because it slips out every single winter. It's one of those road maintenance things. Are we not allowed to maintain our own road? I mean, I was really coming from that place of, you know, I'm sure that we can clean up this mess together because I'm not trying to do anything wrong.
I asked if she had made changes to the property, and she tells the story of her land having been logged before her dad bought it, saying, quote, "It has always been the same. We used the lay of the land as it had been damaged by the logging company."
It's always been the same. Our property had been logged 45 years ago. That's how my dad got it so cheap. It had been completely clear cut. So any development that we did on that property, we used the lay of the land as it had already been damaged. There were skid roads here and there, but the actual garden area was an old log deck area that had always been there. It had always been there. We, you know, maintained those roads. I mean, I don't think anybody had been out there for like 20 years. And so when we just began homesteading it, really, we used those roads. So from the aerial photos, it looks like, oh my gosh, they did all this stuff, you know. And we did. We did. We cleared the brush back. You know, remember, there had been fires out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right below us. I mean, we thought we were going to get taken out, but you know, we did do like brush control. We do all our own firewood. So there was no expanding for the purpose of cannabis cultivation. That is really the point of contention here. I've admitted my part. I'm like, yeah, we did do this and we did do that. But you are making a lot of assumptions here that are incorrect. Warren Black was not hearing it. Again, he didn't respond, so that implicit message is that $20,000 a day threat continues to exist. And I just really resent that they're in this position where they get to place all these timelines and these demands on the people, and yet they don't hold themselves to the same standard. We did not tear up the mountainside and, you know, run water lines into... We were not egregious. Even the building inspector, when he finally did come out, was like, this place is nice. It's clean. You know, my husband's part of the Green Party. I mean, we really care for our property and put a lot of love into that place. And this was just awful. It was awful.
She said that she had to take out a second mortgage and is now out $286,000 from fixing logging legacies. She elaborates.
So we ended up having to do an entire forest restoration program from legacy logging. They declared 32 sites of cleanup that involved little brush piles, and my husband had to install like compacted rolling dips and all these things that basically you have to do after a place has been logged. I cannot believe this. I'm out $286,000 now at the end of all of this abatement. The only thing that has really changed is that we replaced a culvert that really did need replacing. It's all these fees. I had to pay for all these professionals and all these reports and fish and game, and it just went on and on and on. Our forester is the only one that communicated with us on a regular basis, and he found out, told me one day, he said, you know, you have 19 agencies involved in this, don't you? I said, no, I didn't know that, because you're the only one communicating with me.
She highlights paying thousands of dollars for professional reports that were, quote, often inaccurate.
So I think that's another thing, too, is people are having that. They're paying a lot of money for these professional reports that are required, but they're not always accurate either. I'm paying top dollar for these professional reports that are absolutely, like, cut and pasted, and I'm like, I just paid 11 grand for that. That's not even accurate. You're saying I had greenhouses on my property. I don't even have greenhouses. Like, you need to correct that. Kid you not, every single professional I hired, I've had to have the forester correct his report. He made like three massive speculations and assumptions. I'm like, no, you just
sent that to Fish and Game? Like, that is not correct information. I'm really upset. Well, I just need to give him something, and then, and I'm like, no. No, that is not good enough. Do you understand the position I'm in? I need your, you're the professional. They want your signature and your stamp. Yeah. I need it to be accurate.
Not only did she struggle with inaccurate reports, but, quote, government inefficiency, she continues.
They lost our grading report. Should I tell you that? It's just this government inefficiency. I don't even know how to say it, but I was just, the time I went in, I think I told you the story about when I went in to turn in the report and they wouldn't accept it because it was after 4 o'clock and the whole thing. And I needed to get a grading permit for this thing that didn't exist. And then I come to find out that the reason that I couldn't get the grading permit that they kept talking about and came in, come on in and talk to us. You know, you need to get like a, you know, grading permit and everything. You can't even get a grading permit there. Come to find out, my forester is the one who actually explained it to me. He said a regular person can't even get a grading permit. You have to have a professional write a proposal to the county. And after they create the proposal, it generates questions, and then they figure out, you know, cubic feet in this mathematical formula, and then they issue a permit.
Her forester also submitted her application for a standard LSA, or Lake and Streambed Alteration Plan, as was required to remedy the abatement. But the forester warned her, quote, they may kick it back because you were abated, which means she was rerouted into the cannabis pile, requiring much more extensive work, such as a 100-year flood culvert that she said was an estimated $100,000.
We needed to get an LSA. That was part of our restoration program. You know, again, this is thousands just to have him complete the application. We get a thing from Fish and Game, and they tell us, no, you owe us like $5,500. So I asked our forester, well, if we got routed into this other applicant pile, do I get a refund on the $3,000 I just gave you for the first one? Oh, no. So I had to pay for two application fees and I don't get any refunds. I was really pissed off about that. And I had to pay him twice to, you know, fill out the new one too. So once we got routed into the cannabis application pile, that required us to do the 100-year flood culvert. That's an estimated $100,000 project. By the time you paid for all the specialized rock, the actual culvert, the specialists, the excavator operators, the truck drivers, I mean, wow. If you have to have the biologist come out every day and look for the yellow-legged frog, it was 22 pages of every creature that you need to be mindful of, and this is all time-sensitive, too. So our entire project, you know, that's also adding to the stress of this. We had October 15th was just looming. Because then the wet season begins and you're not going to be able to replace your culvert. Luckily, like I said, my husband's pretty handy, very handy, so he could do all that work. And finally, we're waiting for Fish and Game, and our forester, I think he was being like a little bit rebellious, but he was, just go ahead and follow the directions I gave you and do it. So we did it. And it's, you know, 60 feet long. You can walk through it. It's this monster. Yeah, 4 feet around and 60 feet long. It's just this huge culvert to prepare for this 100-year flood. So he gets it all in, and we take all these photos and, you know, get it all signed off by our forester. We still hadn't heard from Fish and Game yet, waiting. October 15th, we get an email from Fish and Game. The day that it's too late to do anything, they emailed us saying, okay, here are your instructions. And I'm like, are you done? You know, we've already completed this whole project, but we're really technically not supposed to begin until, I think, May 15th of next year. But we wanted this abatement over with, you know? I mean, I just want these people out of my life.
And how do you feel? I mean, the fact that this is a logging road, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're cleaning up logging legacies on your own dime?
It was crazy. Every little waterway. And I mean, I took videos of our spring and you know, we also had an issue where one of our neighbors was a legal farmer and all of his wastewater was coming onto our land. And so we had to dig like this massive trench so that it would flow back into the creek. And
she explains the process of remedying the abatement took her husband away from an entire season of work, making $1,400 per day.
Meanwhile, as I've explained to John Ford, because we've met more than once, my husband's not getting paid. he was a union member. He was all set to, as a union equipment owner operator to go work in Paradise this last year. He already had his place where the RV was being parked. He was going to be making like $1,400 a day. We lost out financially tremendously. This was a nightmare. He lost out the whole season. But we couldn't afford to hire somebody to do an entire forest restoration program or to do the 100-year flood culvert.
She explains this whole abatement experience took a toll on her husband's health.
So, yeah, how do we feel about it? It was frustrating. And honestly, it took a toll on my husband's health. Like, he actually had what the neurologist called an attack. I thought he'd had a mini stroke. I really did. He was like, kind of had a weird speech thing and his arm was going numb and I'm like trying to get him into the hospital and finally got the MRI and he had like brain lesions. It was just this whole, like, this was the most stressful experience in our 23 years together. It was just beyond what we can even describe because it just kept going and it kept going and it kept going and it was really expensive and it just kept forking out thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for everything.
Although she hadn't heard back from Ford or Black at the Planning and Building Department for 4 months after doing everything that was requested of her, she said the moment everything changed was when she spoke out about her experience publicly.
We got a stamp of approval of like that the abatement is over, but things really began to change is July 28th, my husband had found something online that there was a town hall meeting in Redway at the Mateel and where they were going to have Sheriff Hansel and John Ford and Estelle Fennell there. And he was like, you know what, we should go. And this is in the thick of us just feeling very alone. I mean, we knew other people had been unjustly abated, but ours was, you know, we've got 19 agencies and just these huge financially devastating projects to do by October 15th, you know? Yeah. And so we go to this town hall meeting. About 2 hours into the meeting, Estelle Fennell, somebody had asked, people had been mentioning abatement stuff, but somebody asked her something or she just began to talk about how easy it is to clear up the confusion if somebody gets abated accidentally. And she used the example of how, oh, you know, you just go and you take photos with the newspaper and you submit it and the abatement goes away. Well, we had done that. We had done that exact thing. We had gotten, you know, the newspaper was April 4th. I still have all the photos. It was raining that day and we're taking all these photos and nothing happened. And so I got in line and I spoke out for the first time about our experience. And John Ford kept telling me that we should just talk after the meeting. And so we did. He agreed to meet with us further. So we met the next day and I brought in, you know, all my files and receipts and just everything that we had acquired during the process so far, including the photos from our forester that showed aerial photos of what our property looked like in the 90s and, you know, even earlier, I believe. But it showed that the graded flat in question had always been there. And he admitted it. He admitted it with Bob Russell there.
After an expansive abatement process that started in March and was still unresolved, she was faced with another looming deadline, whether to get a permit to recoup her losses or not. And she had until December 30th to decide.
It all got blurred. You know, it just became this huge tangled mess. So then, and then, in the meanwhile, the other thing, this clock is ticking and this pressure is happening because he keeps saying, you guys need to sign a compliance agreement. You need to sign a compliance agreement because this is going to be your last chance if you ever want to cultivate on your property. And by the way, you've done all this work. You've paid all this money and you're pretty much halfway there, you know, with everything that you've done. That we had like 10 days left because that was December 19th.
Yeah.
And the deadline was December 30th. And so this clock is ticking. You're in an impacted watershed. You snooze, you lose. You know, that was like happening this whole time. And by the way, if you don't sign a compliance agreement, you can't farm. All of this was culminating, this storm of everything. The clock is ticking. You got to go. You got to go. And I just flat out said to him, I am not going to sign a compliance agreement for something I did not do. It's not going to happen. And he said, I'll make a go away.
Even though she turned in her application for a permit before the deadline, she was at the bottom of the stack. And the cannabis planner told her she would get to the application when she got to it, but it didn't look like they'd be able to farm this year.
We were at the bottom of the stack. We were told by our consultant that we weren't going to get to farm this year because we turned it in on December 19th. and there was such a huge stack of people to get through, our cannabis planner told our consultant that she would get to it when she got to it, but it didn't look like she'd get to it in time for us to farm this year. And I lost it. Absolutely lost it. I was like, I am done. I am absolutely done. I called John Ford that minute. He actually picked up the phone, which is a miracle. And I said, we can't have that. After everything we've been through and I'm taking out a mortgage, we have to be able to farm this year. That is the whole reason I'm doing this, is so we can get our money back that we've lost. He handled it. He got us out of the bottom of the stack. But what about people who don't have that? I don't want to be someone special. Well, I'm not trying to get extra favors. I was just expressing the truth. The urgency of this is, this isn't going to work for me. I'm not into bashing John Ford. I think he's a good man in a really shitty position. I really do. I think that he gets overwhelmed with these horror stories that he can't really do anything about. I really do think he's trying to do right by us to this day. I don't think everybody has gotten his attention. I don't think I would have ever gotten his attention had I not spoken up at that town hall meeting on July 28th.
She elaborates on issues faced by legal farms, including increased vulnerabilities, theft, and a lack of trust in the agency they're working with.
Legal farmers, they're more vulnerable than ever. And all the people that got robbed last year, it was just phenomenal. I mean, it almost sounded like it was a daily event, and there was really no support from law enforcement. I shouldn't say there isn't, but it didn't feel like the farmers felt supported.
She spoke about getting robbed a couple of weeks ago and said, quote, the police would not come out to her property to investigate, even though a gun was stolen.
Again, you know, I've had that property. It's been in my family forever. And you had good neighbors and everything. And as soon, and we just had this fear, do we even want to open up this door? Do we want to legally farm? Do we want to deal with this agency again? Because we just survived this nightmare. I mean, these are some big decisions that we had to make. And but one of the questions we had for John Ford is, what kind of protection do we get? You hear about farmers, they're getting robbed left and right. And so he listened to that, but there really wasn't much to say. Lo and behold, about 2 weeks ago, our cabin gets broken into.
What?
Full on, break the window, come into the house, ransack the home. Yeah, because we're on the map now. You can Google Earth any farm. I just am so uncomfortable with this. My husband calls the sheriff and says, hey, you know, I'm on the books now. I've got like a legal farm. You know, I just came out literally to get a tool from my shop. My place is broken into. Sheriff won't even come out.
What?
You can come in and make a report.
Really?
I'm like, is this what we're looking at? We're on our own. They would not even come out. And then when he went into the sheriff, because he was on his way to a job, and he's like, look, it's going to be a 4-hour drive for me to come all the way into town, you know, give you my, because they stole a gun.
Oh, wow.
Give you, you know, the paperwork for my gun. Can't you just meet me halfway? I'm on my way, you know. No. So he goes in, and the suggestion was, you should board up your cabin when you leave and tie up some really mean dogs. I'm like, isn't it illegal to chain up your dogs anymore?
It should be.
We don't do that.
Yeah.
We don't chain up our dogs. Like, they're our family. They live with us. They're our kids, you know? We're not going to chain them. I just thought it was really silly advice.
She confirms what my last interviewee stated, quote, the bigger grows were enabled by the permit process, while the mom and pops get hit by the abatement program.
I have to kind of back up what the other guy in your other interview was talking about. In our experience, and the people that we know, the most egregious farmers of all are the ones who went legal. They had the money. They were the ones blowing it up. I mean, just killing it. Absolutely just raping the forest. And I mean, then you have the small mom and pops that it just, you know, building a little cabin and doing a little this and a little that and just really loving their little life. And then they just get hit and they don't have a barrel of money in the ground or a rich relative to ask to help them or a financial backer or anything like that. They were just small, sustainable people living close to the earth and they love their life. But yeah, the ones that we know that, because that was a question that was posed to me at one point, is how come you guys didn't go legal in 2016? And I'm like, because we didn't have the money. That was at the heart of the collapse of the economy. Nobody had any money. There was no money to fund this. But the big farmers that maybe had the barrel of money, they could fund it. They could pay for all this. They're not feeling, I'm not saying they're not stressed, but they're not feeling the intensity of it. They don't think in the same way.
She spoke about the suggestion from her lender to log her property again to get the money for a permit. But she said, I waited 45 years for the forest to grow back, and I could just never log it.
Well, that's what our lender that actually suggested that we do. Like, you guys could just log your property again, and you could, pay for... I'm like, we don't want to log it. I've been waiting 45 years for it to grow back. I don't want to log the property. I just got done cleaning up an abatement order of, Like, I just literally did an entire forest restoration program. Why would I go and have it logged now? Can't anyway, But that was the solution to get money to fund the farm.
She discusses the permit process having, quote, all this red tape, inspiring a loss of freedom and connection to the earth.
I think that the part that I'm hearing the most from people is the freedom. And feeling that connection with the earth and just getting to do what you love to do and being stewards of the land and that isn't being talked about enough. Now you have all this government red tape and all this stress that, you don't even feel like you can, shovel a heap of dirt without just being like, do you need a permit? And our big joke now, I kid you not, is do you have a permit for that? Is it stamped? Is it engineered? I don't know about that. I don't know. It hasn't been stamped. Hasn't been engineered. Or what? How come it's so strict with us? There's no fun in the farming anymore. There's no freedom in any of this. I don't know that it will ever be the lifestyle that, like, my grandparents had. They were farmers in Ferndale, or just these people that love to be outside. They love their animals. They love what they do. They love the life. And now, okay, so now we're paying you all off because that's what you want us to do. You want to cut. You're making it pure hell. And now we're going to get robbed. And you're not even going to come out.
She recently filed a claim against the county for reimbursement, which was denied last week. She reads the denial letter aloud.
So dated April 2nd, 2020, the subject is the notice of rejection and the letter of explanation. It says my name, which I'm not saying, but we have completed our investigation regarding the claim for damages you filed with the clerk of the Board of Supervisors on March 5th, 2020. Based on our investigation, the county's direction for remediation was to stop cultivating, remove the cannabis and related infrastructure, and restore any grading completed to accommodate the cannabis cultivation. Planning and building staff were not given opportunity in this situation to review the work plan prior to remediation and did not direct the additional work that was undertaken. The county does not enforce requirements of California Department of Fish and Wildlife, so all the costs associated with replacement of culverts are not the result of the county's direction. Therefore, the County of Humboldt is rejecting your claim with the enclosed notice of rejection. And this was CC to John Ford, Robert Russell, Risk Management. So he's saying they didn't have an opportunity. We even invited John Ford out. Come and check out. You want to see our place? Like, come look at it. Like, and so after the meeting on July 29th, he said, well, what we really need is that grading report. And then, you need to put in like this little French drain thing in front of our house and a couple little things. And then we'll come and sign off. So, but this restoration plan was in place. So my understanding was we need to have a restoration plan. We have to have a professional that's in charge of that. We need to complete that, and then we get signed off. So I was rushing to get through the 31 sites of cleanup. Go, 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 go. We go in and have our final meeting with John Ford, and I say, hey, we're done. Now, how about, giving us our money back, okay, for, this whole financial devastation thing? And that's when he actually blew up and said, why did you do all of this? I could not believe, my attorney's there, my husband's there, and he's getting really pissed because John Ford was like, he repeated. But I can stick up for myself, too. And I was like, I can't, why are you yelling at me for doing what I've been asked to do? I'm actually following the rules here. At what point was I supposed to know, based on my limited knowledge and the $20,000 a day threat hovering, that, gee, I just don't think I'm going to do this. I'm just not going to do what I'm asked to do. To me, that meant my property is getting a lien put against it and ultimately seized. I didn't see room for a conversation in that. I mean, we've met two other times. At no point did he say, don't worry about doing that 100-year flood culvert. You know, don't worry about that. There was never a conversation about how we were doing too much. Until it came down to me asking for reimbursement and showing him my expense sheet and how much we'd actually really been financially devastated. That's when he was like, why did you do all this? And he did apologize for kind of getting heated with me. He said, I don't mean to yell at you. I don't mean to blame you. He admitted, he said, this is the worst case I've seen. And I'm really upset that this happened. Well, I said, well, me too.
So on your abatement, your notice of violation and your notice to abate the nuisance, allegedly, it says the solution on the right side of the column for each violation. Typically, from my experience, they say you must get a permit to, I mean, they've changed them quite a bit over the years. They've actually reworded them. So I don't know which version you got.
So it has corrective action required. And we have two violations. So under the violation of commercial cannabis land use ordinance, it says the corrective action is to seize all commercial cannabis cultivation operations and remove all cannabis and infrastructure supporting commercial cannabis, including water infrastructure and power sources. We had none of that. We didn't even have cannabis on our property.
Yeah.
We didn't have greenhouses. We didn't have power sources. We just didn't have any of that. Yeah. And then the grading without permit, it says facilities, activities in violation of the commercial cannabis land use ordinance. But the corrective action says submit and obtain approval for a restoration plan that restores, revegetates the graded area to pre-violation conditions, obtain all permits needed for restoration, complete the approved work, and pass a final inspection.
Isn't that what you did?
That's what I thought I did.
At this time, she still has the option to sue the county of Humboldt.
She adds,
this really just pushed so many of my buttons around social justice, around oppression, all my big issues. You know, this is just it to actually happen to us. I don't really know how other people are handling this. I've heard of people committing suicide over this. My neighbor told me about a guy that, I mean, I think he had other troubles in his life, but then he got the abatement and he was just like, that's it. Couldn't take it, you know?
I feel like we need to have, like, an abatement support group, and I would be happy to facilitate that. I kid you not. Like,
bless your heart.
People have horror stories, and they don't really have anybody that they can really talk to about it. I can, like, shout out to my neighbors or my best friends. I mean, people care. But when you've been through it, it's just a validating experience to be like, yeah, and me too.
This is part two in a series on Humboldt County's cannabis abatement program. Click part one for more.
Reporting from your community, this is Nicole Norris.